It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. We are up and running and rolling merrily along on this 8th day of March 2018. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. You can also find us at HeadOn.live. Two separate streams emanating from both locations. Live on TuneIn, live on Stitcher, live on Roku. Live. That's what The Horn is. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. You might want to run on, we're going to be busy tonight. You might want to run on over to one of the websites and click on the website, chat room interface and jump into that, jump in there, lickety-split. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password if you've never done it before and hop right in, and you will be immediately met by the likes of, Anatole and Rhonda and VT Blom. More to come later because we don't have a tardy bell or anything like that. All capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who being a spacing guild master has folded space this evening to become, and you will see him as such in the chat room, Man Cave. Yes. Boy, I tell you what, Marty, you were kind of quick on the who are you. I got to the who are you pretty damn, I was proud of that. Some people, there's no pleasing them. But anyway, we are live on all the streams and rocking and rolling and ready to, well, it's been a busy day. It has been. And you know, friends, for those busy days, you might have you ever been so tired your eyes feel like they're all dried out and they're just kind of ooey and gooey and, you know. Well, we've got a solution, friends. Yes. I just, moments ago, received a communique from the hardworking periodontic peripatetic scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, that, by golly, we've just gotten a shipment in of Globetrotting Golden Seal. Yes, Globetrotting Golden Seal, only from Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter. You can empty out one of our little capsules, make an eye wash of it, and it will perk your eyeballs right up. Yes, absolutely. Globetrotting Golden Seal from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. We use a proprietary blend of hand-gathered, organic, non-GMO, gluten-free, soy-free, cage-free, cruelty-free, free-range Golden Seal that, you know what? Sometimes we all just get slow on the insides and stuff. Sometimes we want to just scrub those kidneys squeaky clean. Globetrotting Golden Seal can do that for you. Hey, You want to detox your liver so that it'll stop resembling foie gras in the making because of your long-standing appointment with Reverend with Reverend Craig or Reverend Reverend Williams? Well, Globetrotting Golden Seal is for you. Of course, I should probably mention that this is a bullshit nutritional supplement and will do absolutely nothing for you. That's the guaranteed part of Globetrotting Golden Seal from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Yes, guaranteed to do absolutely nothing for you because it's just another bullshit nutritional supplement being hustled on the internet, on the Twitters, and, of course, on the radio, because you can't be a real, live, honest-to-goodness professional radio operation unless you've got a bullshit nutritional supplement to hustle to the credulous. And speaking of the credulous, we've got them, Credulity Strips. If you order right now and pick yourself up a 90-day supply of Globetrotting Golden Seal from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, well, by golly, we will. We'll send you a little bundle of Credulity Strips, and when you empty out one of the capsules, mix it with a little bit of water or alcohol or, motor oil, who cares? Stick the Credulity Strip in, and right away, it'll turn a bright red, the Credulity Strip will, and you'll know right then and there that you've been had because you ordered a nutritional supplement, a bullshit nutritional supplement on the radio. You know, I've never cared much for Golden Seal, but I tell you what, Globetrotting Golden Seal, it makes it possible for me to have my Golden Seal goodness, that wonder of nature, that miracle of Mother Earth, each and every day. Globetrotting Golden Seal, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. And that 90-day supply, well, that'll only set you back $116.22, plus shipping and handling of $257.13. Globetrotting Golden Seal, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. No salesman will call. This is not a free call. Your mileage may vary. We cut out the middleman and don't send any savings on to you. Accept no substitutes, post no bills, use no hooks. This side up, FOB, COD, SEAL, Globetrotting Golden Seal, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Yes, yes. And so we're off and running, ready to go. Of course, barring anybody being stupid enough to order our Horn Nutraceuticals, which, of course, we won't ship to you because they don't exist. They're not real. They're bullshit nutritional supplements. Well, we try to raise $200 every evening. Yep. Mm-hmm. $16 at $12.50, $32 at $6.25, or $64 at $3.13. We round it up for 3.125 to 3.13, and we take that half a penny, and we put it into the great big Horn Slush Fund, which this month is going to because spring is on the way, going toward repainting the massive Horn Mansion, kidney shaped, Olympic size swimming pool. Okay? Yes. So, you know, the PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com or headon.live. And the funnest part of all of this is when we can knock out fundraising early in the program, and then I don't have to talk about it for the next 3 hours because it's been gotten out of the way. So if you want to, run on over and kick in. You know, it works out for a $10 a month subscriber. It works out to being a contribution of a little less than around 48 cents per 3 hour episode. Okay, around 16 cents an hour. Not a lot of 16 cents an hour stuff out there. Not a lot of folks willing to live on 16 cents an hour or try to run a radio network on it, for that matter. So, and by the way, we have subscribers to thank this evening. We do, and we cherish and we really appreciate our subscribers because they knock down about a week's worth of fundraising so that we're able to do fundraising free horn for like the last week of the month when we keep up with fundraising all the way. In point of fact, there they are. Thanks go out this evening to our subscribers, Nancy in Virginia. Thank you, Nancy. And thank you very kindly to Tom in Pennsylvania. Thank you, Tom. Thank you kindly to Marcia there in Oregon. I think we talked to Marcia just the other night. Thank you, Marcia. And thank you to Dwayne in Pennsylvania as well. On any given night, we need to have, if we were ever to get to the point where I didn't have to talk about fundraising anymore, wouldn't that be fan-freaking-tastic? We'd need about 20$10 a month subscribers on any given night. As you heard there, we have four this evening. If folks would like to sign up for a subscription, that would be magnificent. And, it's just a matter of clicking the little box, putting 10.10.00 in the box at the PayPal interface, and you're done. If, on the other hand, God, this gets so tiring. You hate PayPal, you despise PayPal, you spit on the ground at the mere mention of PayPal, well, that's why we have the Patreon campaign for subscribers who want to do it that way. Patreon.com/Bob Kincaid, and you can sign up over there. And those contributions are only subscriptions are only pulled out on the first day of the month. With PayPal, it just comes out on whatever day you sign up. Okie doke, and we thank each and every one of our Patreon subscribers as well. So that takes care of, then there's the Postal Service. If you would prefer to operate via the U.S. Postal Service, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV, 25801. Let me know that there's going to be something in the mailbox. I'll tell Boss Man Wayne about it, and he, in turn, won't have to take his spider-proof gloves into the post office, well, the UPS store with him, and instead he can just take his handy-dandy little concealable combination taser and pepper spray hoser in case he runs into the Grand Kleagle Dragon Cyclops of the Ku Klux Klan, who also gets their mail at the same location. Yes. Mm-hmm. All right, then. Now we've got everything taken care of, and we can get on to the bulk of the program. Let's start with some multimedia, shall we? Because, well, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and this damn sure qualifies. Oh, yes, it does. Let's go out to Berkeley, California. You know, when we think about Trumpansies, we tend to think about places like West Virginia, Kentucky, Alabama, Ohio. Oh, but they're out in California, too. Oh, yes, they are. And so, consequently, we've got a thing here. A little business in Berkeley called Revolution Books. Oh dear, that sounds scary, doesn't it? If you're one of the maggots. Revolution Books. And a guy with not a whole lot of teeth in his head, but wearing a slightly soiled-looking MAGA hat, because he's a maggot, decided to go after a woman standing in front of Revolution Books, which, if I'm not mistaken, Revolution Books sells left-leaning literature and magazines and whatnot. And so a bunch of maggots decided to assault Revolution Books in Berkeley. I bet you our friend Larry, who lives in Berkeley, I bet he knows about Revolution books. Well, the maggot ran up against somebody who was there holding up a sign that said Revolution Books is open, because these people were trying to shut them down. And some typical maggot behavior ensued.
I'm a racist because I support our president of this United States of America?
Yes, basically, yes.
You are so ignorant. That is the worst
fucking
excuse.
Commie scum. Yes,
give me a good reason.
You're commie scum. We're going to burn down your bookstore. You know
give me
that,
a
right?
fucking good reason.
Okay, we have you on recorded that you say you're going to burn down our bookstore.
Oh, my God!
You're the one.
The shouting maggot there, who sounds like he's one Spyro key shy of a neuro. He's wrapped up in an American flag, and he's videoing himself telling them that they are going to burn down. In other words, he's admitting on his own video, and video that's also being taken, that he's going to burn down Revolution Books. This is, like I said, Thorn in the Side Thursday, and behold the maggots.
Give me a fucking good reason.
Okay, we have you on recorded that you say you're going to burn down our bookstores.
Oh, my God!
You're the ones that are burning books. You're the ones that are trying to get rid of history.
No, dumbass. It's a bookstore, not a book incinerator. They sell books, not burn them.
These judgmental pieces of shit. You can't tell us how to live. This is America,
right? You're the ones
right?
that are burning.
Yeah, isn't that beautiful? Judgmental piece of shit. You can't tell us how to live. Yeah. Because I'm not judgmental, because I just called you a piece of shit. Oh, my God, not that. Clarity tells me they carry No Low Press, including Renter's Rights Manual Guide for California. Anarchy! Anarchy!
Books. Please leave now.
This is America. Fuck you. This is a public thing. Why don't you go in there and start fucking...
Please leave now. You're not allowed in our store. Please
I already said
now.
No. I'm not going in your fucking store, so get the fuck out of my face. And this motherfucker wants to fucking do it. Yeah, no. You motherfuckers,
look.
I was here March 4th, April 15th, no. April 27th. We ran your stupid asses out of the fucking Berkeley. Trump is going to get rid of all you fucking pieces of shit. You know that?
Wait, here comes a line. You might want to pay attention to this one. You know how everybody says, "Oh, why do you pay give attention? Why do you draw attention to what these people say?" This is why. Okay? You would think I wouldn't get questions like that, like say after Charlottesville, but I still do from time to time.
Man, your stupid ass is out of the fucking Berkeley. Trump is going to get rid of all you fucking pieces of shit. You know that? Fuck all you anti-American
pieces.
Hey,
you know what?
Your genocide is coming. Your genocide is coming, says the female member of the maggot contention there. You got that? Your genocide is coming. It's the use of the possessive pronoun that makes it interesting. Is it because the woman appears to be Asian? Or maybe isn't? It's because of the political beliefs that she holds. These lovers of Merck love everything except, you know, the First Amendment. This is kind of sobering. Yeah, they're just loudmouths. They won't do nothing. Probably got a house full of freaking guns.
Fuck all you anti-American
people. Hey, you know what? Your genocide is coming.
Your genocide is coming. Your hats say, make America great again.
Hell yeah.
And you can tell that what this really means is make America white again.
Hey, Revolution Books, the only people that fucking come here
and
to buy
further,
this
we don't
are Antifa
allow
pieces
here
of
who
shit.
Call women
These
business.
Are anti-capital.
If you won't let us
no
read your
way.
Books, how are we supposed to know
no
what you believe
oh,
in?
Yeah.
What you believe in if you won't let us
fucking
read your
people
books.
Are calling them, calling them.
Well, they're a bookstore dipshit. If you want to pay money and buy the books, they'll probably sell them to you. They might even go and pull them off the shelf and run your money through the register and everything. I'm pretty sure Revolution Books doesn't operate on like they don't use like tofu and tempeh for currency or anything. Just saying. Why don't you let us read your books? Well, you know, because you've just said that you want to burn the place down, so probably not a good idea to let you in there because you're probably stupid enough to try to burn the place down with yourself inside it. And while if you were the only one in there, that might be a net gain to society, there are other people inside the building.
America fascist, anti-American, and they're...
White supremacists and fascists are not welcome at Revolution Books.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty happy to give free publicity to Revolution Books. Marty, you're right. They kept feeding the trolls. But they're Revolution Books, so it's not likely that they're going to call the police to come and step in on back because, well, the police might very well come in and side with the maggots. You never know. Yeah. Thorn in the Side Thursday. Just thought we might start there. Maggots. Can't live with them. Can't send them to Mars. Yet. There's that. And there's definitely that. What else, just to get the program started this evening? Well, it's Trade War Day in America. Oh, yes, it is. And here on Trade War Day, we have we have Donald Trump trying to get a good trade war started with the a big chunk of the rest of the world. This was the way he characterized it this afternoon. You might want to have the hockey puck handy.
Defense is so important. We need steel. We need aluminum. We're negotiating with Mexico. We're negotiating with Canada and the NAFTA. And depending on whether or not we reach a deal, also very much involved with that is national defense. But if we reach a deal, it's most likely that we won't be charging those two countries the tariffs. We have other countries that are...
So, in other words, he's talking about Mexico and Canada. This is an attempt to shake down Mexico and Canada, but primarily Mexico. What do you want to bet somewhere along the way? We're going to have some negotiations. I'm going to make a deal. It's going to be a beautiful deal, believe me. And Mexico is going to pay for the wall. Because, see, that's what's going to follow from all of this silly horse shit. Is that we'll exempt Mexico, and then we'll have some negotiations. And once they've decided to pay for the wall, We'll make these exemptions permanent. You know, I really think maybe I'm wrong in this, but I think Canada and Mexico should each pay for a wall. They should build a wall. Canada should build a wall and wall off the United States. It's a long-ass border. Might cost a little bit. But Canada probably should. And Mexico should do the same. Do it on Mexican property. And wall, wall us out. Because at this point in time, the United States is, I'd say it's a good guess that we're, if we haven't already gotten there, we're two shakes of a lamb's tail away from pariah state status. Anyway, geezer disgust us wasn't done yet.
They're very much involved with us on trade, but also on military and working together with military. And we'll be making a decision as to who they are. We have a very close relationship with Australia. We have a trade surplus with Australia. Great country, long-term partner. We'll be doing something with them. We'll be doing something with some other countries. We're going to be very flexible. At the same time, we have some friends and some enemies where we have been tremendously taken advantage of over the years.
We have some friends and some enemies where we've been taken advantage of over the years. Just let that one roll around for a minute. Does one usually trade with one's stated enemies? Now, one can, for instance, have an adversarial but non-hostile relationship and engage in trade. But an outright enemy? And just out of curiosity, who are those enemies? I mean, it's not like the American steel and aluminum industries are being destroyed by imported North Korean and Iranian steel, are we? No. Now, there is some crummy-ass steel that comes out of Pakistan. How do I know? I like to shave with a straight razor when I shave. It makes it an adventure. And it's old-timey. And if you go online to certain websites, you can find straight razors for like 10, 15 bucks. They come from Pakistan. And the steel is not worth a shit. You can get your Arkansas stone out and all your various grit sharpening stones, and you can work and work and work and work and work, and that piece of shit will never take an edge, and it won't cut butter, let alone shave any hairs off your face. Crummy steel. But again, Pakistan is not an enemy. Who are these enemies of whom he speaks? Qatar? Well, we've got a few thousand naval personnel parked over there, not to mention no small number of naval vessels popping by from time to time. Turkey? Nah, he loves Tayyip Erdogan. Philippines? Nope. He loves Duterte, no matter how many people Duterte has extrajudicially murdered. Russia? Russia is our friend. More on how friendly Russia is in the moment. Yeah. Yeah, oh, by the way, Sergei Skripal and his daughter? Yeah, it turns out they were poisoned with a nerve agent. Yeah, that came out in the last 24, 36 hours or so.
But Mother Russia is no enemy of the United States. No, he's not enemy. No, never.
So the question remains, who does this idiot think our enemies are? China?
that just a day or so ago, the spirochetes were telling us that
we have a great relationship with China. It's a beautiful relationship. It's a fabulous relationship, believe me.
I mean, Kuala Lumpur? Bangladesh? Uruguay? Enemies. He used the word enemies. Enemies are people that you have wars with. Who does he want to have a war with? I mean, well... And he's going to start a trade war with the EU. Maybe I just answered the question. Maybe not at all influenced by Russia, Carotene Caligula sees France and Germany and Spain and Italy and Greece, Belgium and the Netherlands as enemies.
I know. It's those inscrutable Swedes.
Maybe it's the Finns. Could it be the Estonians or the Lithuanians? In the land of
the spirochetes, there are no easy answers. David in South Carolina, Stan, of course, reminding me, a member of the Fraternity of David. It was an accident, of course. It was an accidental nerve agent exposure. It, of course, definitely. Yes.
But there's that magic word. Enemies.
Or do we just use enemies because adversaries is too big a word for the spirochetes to pronounce?
And we have some friends and some enemies where we have been tremendously taken advantage of over the years on trade and on military. If you look at NATO, where Germany pays 1% and we're paying 4.2% of a much bigger GDP, it's not fair. So we have a lot of things going on. I think, General, with NATO, because of my involvement, we've taken in $33 billion more within the next, I guess, year and a half. They expect to have taken in $33 billion more. And
this stupid bastard thinks that we get paid by other countries. Oh, my God. And then there's the... What's that old saying? A man who counts only the cost of something will never know the value of anything. We have a vested interest in Europe not turning itself into an abattoir every generation and a half or so. Because somehow or another, we wind up getting dragged into it, or at least we did twice in the 20th century. In Flanders fields, the poppies grow. Amidst the crosses, row on row. Isn't that how it goes, or something like that? Yeah. The world is a better place because we have used a minuscule portion of our wealth over the years to try to keep the world from sliding into war. Now we've got a guy who's got a teeny tiny little stiffy for one. I mean, a stiffy's a stiffy. The fact that it's tiny, well, I'm probably sex shaming him, so, you know. Bad progressive radio host. Bad, bad. But he's pissing and moaning about Germany because Germany is now the leader of the free world.
German newspapers make no, they're not even trying anymore. They just refer to him in their pages as an idiot, as a fool, as a jackass. Mainly because he is. Note coming in from Steve in New York, a member of the fraternity of Steve. Perhaps I'm delusional. However, we haven't had the violence of two world wars since the integration of Europe among themselves and with us. Perhaps I'm just dreaming. No, that's real. That's real. You know, we don't always get along quite so famously. One of the more idiotic blunders that we made because we wanted to keep France happy. So 55,000 plus Americans, not including him, paid with their lives. So Charles de Gaulle could posture in front of the French. How, and this comes back to something I've referred to a couple of times. How do these deluded little sparkle farters look at something like this and say,
"Oh, there's nothing to Russia. Russia doesn't have any influence on him. Russia is cuddly and snuggable, and they're just, and they've got a lovely democracy over there where the only journalists and gay people who get killed are the ones who really need it."
What kind of shoestring mental gymnastics does one have to engage in to buy into that line of reasoning? Because the fact of the matter is, every night, Vlad Putiput falls asleep with his dick in his hands, masturbating over the idea of driving wedges between the member nations of NATO so that he can expand his tyrannical, dictatorial, authoritarian sphere of influence. I like European liberal democracies. I like them a lot. I like the Germans and the Swedes and the Norwegians and the Finns and the Danes and the Dutch. I like the Belgians and the French and the Spanish and the Portuguese and the Italians and the Greeks. I like the Czechs. Particularly fond of corn checks. No, stop it. They got a lot more on the ball right now than we do. Among other things, some of those countries, not all of them, have highly functional governments. We, on the other hand, if you ever wanted an example of just how pusillanimous and how impotent this useless, good-for-not-a-goddamn-thing Congress of ours is, consider this. The vast majority of the members of the majority in both houses of the Congress think that this little trade war he's trying to gin up is a full-on invitation to economic disaster. And it may well be. I hope it's not, but it may well be. I guess I'm in the position of hoping that the other countries of the world, these enemies like Germany that he refers to, I'm in the position of having to hope
that they'll just take it on the chin. I think. And that they won't retaliate and collectively crush the American economy. You know, because wishing for something like an economic collapse in one's own country is, it's counterintuitive, to say the very least. And yes, I like Porsches. And yes, it's a two-syllable word. I like Mercedes-Benz automobiles. I like Ferraris. Alfa Romeos. Not that I'm... then there's the fact... If the European countries really want to play hardball, it's kind of hard to conceive now, but the five top industrial manufacturing states in the U.S., one of them's Alabama, because there's a bunch of foreign car companies there. What happens if they pick up the phones and go, you sure about these steel tariffs, Cantaloupe Caligula? Are you sure? You're positive about them? You are? Oh, that's such a pity. We have no choice but to shut down our plants in South Carolina and Alabama. Wouldn't that just be funny? That'd be a knee slapper. All them little maggots down in Alabama and South Carolina suddenly finding themselves out of work because of that feller that promised that he was going to make America great again. Not rooting for that. But I can't help coming back to an article we talked about here on the program that I got to do better at bookmarking stuff. But there was an article about how great, horrible conflagrations on planet Earth tend to begin with little things that seem like somewhere around nothing, and then snowball into great, rolling, monumental, fecal boulders, fecal avalanches. And it seems like with everything he does, that comes back to my mind. Which one of these is going to be that one? And there's really no way of knowing. Thank you, Scott and Punky. In Lady Windermere's Fan, Oscar Wilde had Lord Darlington quip that a cynic was a man who knows the price of everything and the value of nothing. That's where that comes from. So this could get really interesting really quickly. Now that he has, for all intents and purposes, declared Germany to be an enemy of the United States. You know, all those little things. We talk from time to time about the stuff that we watch on TV, well, if you call it TV anymore. Been watching a Netflix series. It was their first native language series made outside the United States, if I understand correctly. It's called Babylon Berlin. It's set in 1929. Very good series making. Fantastic acting. The set decorator and the properties masters must have been absolutely wild to be doing this thing. There are very few direct historical references in it, But what you see is an overall picture of Weimar Germany in 1929, a scant 4 years from the beginning of the disaster. And you see these little moments taking place. And with the value of the history, of the hindsight of history, you can say, yeah, that's one of those little Burma shave signs. Well, I fear you're correct, Brother Deacon Asa. Brother Deacon Asa says, by the time the head maggot is done with your country, Mr. Bob, 2008 will look like economic prosperity. Clarity says, my governor is on his enemy list. Brown has pursued arguably the most aggressively liberal agenda of any governor in America. Comes from the Hill. Larry, on the other hand, says, I wish just once he would say the word boogeyman. Lots of boogeymen around corners all over the planet that are coming for us. And so this is a giant shakedown. And meanwhile, there are maggots everywhere who are just hopping up and down with glee. I was listening to National Petroleum Radio earlier, and I heard some steel workers interviewed and a couple of aluminum workers. These would be the grasshoppers in the fable of the grasshopper and the ant. With no care whatsoever for the coming of winter. But anyway, what I was saying earlier, you want a picture of just how impotent this Republican Congress is? They're at almost a 100% level, or close enough to make for an almost, of disagreement with this unthought-out episode of protectionism. And yet, when they're asked, well, they say, you know, we don't want to go messing with the president. One maggot from Pennsylvania, a guy named Lou Barletta, I remember him from long-ago conversations with our buddy Spike up there. Lou Barletta said, we just need to create some space around him and let him see if he can do what he thinks he can do. We don't need to be jumping on him right here. Oh, my God, you chicken shit. So the vast majority of them disagree with him. And it's a safe bet that a significant majority of Democrats disagree with them. To the extent that they could probably pass legislation, he could veto it, and they could fucking override it. 67 votes in the Senate? If they really, really believe as strongly these Republicans as they say they do, but they're afraid. They are water-boweled, terrified to stand up to this godforsaken, dumber-than-dirt fucking bully. All they have to do is bloody his nose once. It's been proven time and again. Oh, I never settle cases. How many cases has he settled? All of them. He's never won any cases. But they're too chicken shit to stand up to him. Oh, I tell you what, the fine folks there, and this is going to get a little complicated, the fine folks there in Kentucky who make Maker's Mark bourbon, who are owned by Jim Beam, who is in turn owned by Suntory Brands of Japan. Did you know that? They are. They're going to love it when a great big whopping tariff goes on Kentucky bourbon. Oh, they're just going to love it. And when the tariff that hits Harley-Davidson in Wisconsin, when that son of a bitch hits, sorry, when that doggone thing hits, I can't say SOB anymore, when that thing hits, and it turns out it's easier to buy an Italian bike, or those things are freaking awesome, or, say, a German bike, BMWs are awesome. When you can buy one of those for a quarter of the price of a hardly rideable, and suddenly there's layoffs at the hardly rideable plants, what are the maggots going to say? What are they going to, up in the Scott Walker stand, what are they going to say to Paul Ryan? Hey, you chicken shit. Why didn't you stand up to him? Why did you let him destroy Harley Davidson? Or out in, say, Kansas stand, when a great big whopping tariff gets put on agricultural goods from the United States. You know what they're going to say?
He's just trying to make America great again, and it's our enemies that won't let him do it.
And then they'll look down and notice all the drool that's running down their shirts. And because that's really pretty much the final analysis. As we've said here before, for the hardcore cancerous knot of hard cases and dead enders of the 30 percenters, there's nothing he can do that will make them turn away from him. And as long as the Mitch McConnells and the Paul Ryans know that, and they know that all they've got to do is scrounge up another 21% to win re-election, which is a hell of a lot easier than starting at zero and trying to find 51, then it don't much matter what happens to the woman in the PR department down there at Labrett and Graham's Woodford Reserve in Kentucky. Or what happens to the chrome polisher at the hardly rideable factory up in Wisconsin. They don't matter. The only thing that matters to the Republican majority is maintaining power. And the people can be damned. And we can have ourselves an economic meltdown that, as Brother Deacon Asa points out, makes 2008 look like a walk in the park. And that won't matter either. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, ironically, a lot of the Harley-Davidson peeps are maggots themselves. Yeah, I know. A hardly rideable is a status symbol for boomers with disposable income. you don't just see a whole lot of young people tooling around on hardly rideables. Of course, they're brutally expensive, and that sort of explains some of that. Oh, well. We got a little bit left of this.
Mr. Stoltenberg, who is running things, is very thankful. He said, it's incredible what's happened since we became involved. And I became involved by complaining because it was not fair. We were spending 85% of the money, and frankly, good for everybody, but it helps them a lot more than it helps us, helps Europe a lot more than it helps us. So we look at the military equation, too. General Mattis, it's very important to him and to me to maintain those great relationships. At the same time, we both want fairness. So we view the trade and we view the military, and to a certain extent, they go hand in hand.
Absolutely.
And a lot of progress has been made.
Jesus. So, meanwhile, that master of the Parthian shot, the retiring Arizona Republican Senator Jeff Flake, has said that, well, if these tariffs are anything like what Trump's predicting, I'm going to, as soon as it comes out, if it's anything approximating what he's talked about, introduce legislation to nullify it. I'm assuming I won't be the only one to do that. Well, you know what? You can hope he does it in one hand and shit in the other and see which one fills up first. Yeah. And then there was the ceremonial trade war declaration signing ceremony. In which he brought on some stage props in work clothes. And at one point in time, he started talking about how proud this one fella's daddy would be of him, Trump, for, you know, the tariffs. Because somewhere along the way, somebody had told the Nectarine Nero that this one particular steel worker's daddy worked in the same factory where his son now worked. Daddy'd worked there for 40 years. And the following little tidbit of hilarity ensued.
Well, your father, Herman, is looking down. He's very proud of you right now.
Oh, he's still alive.
He is? Well, then he's... Hey, then he's even more proud of you. Then he's even...
Yeah, he's looking down at you. He's very pretty.
He's still alive. Meanwhile, Herman's sitting back at home watching it going, I'm not dead yet. I feel fine. I feel happy.
Jesus. What a maroon.
It's just embarrassing. And then at the signing, like I said, there was a signing of a ceremonial declaration of war.
Positive things, but you are great people. Would you like to take a picture in the Oval Office? I assume you've all been many times into the Oval Office. Come on, let's go and do that. Let's go and do that. Yes, I'm going to do. We'll go into the Oval Office. We're going to sign this up. We'll go.
Yeah, he was getting ready to wander off with the stage props when Steve Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, leaned over and said, sir, you know, sounding surprisingly Smithers-like, you know, sir, you have to sign the thing first. I'm going to
sign it. You're definitely going to sign it.
Hoo-wee. man, did I pick a bad day to quit sniffing glue. I did. Not much you can do about it, though. So here we are at the end of the filibobster. We have, and it's not all Trump. And even this isn't. Well, I mean, it is Trump. But the impacts are going to affect the American people a lot more than they're going to impact Trump. Robert in Australia with a note. Australia might be exempt from tariff. A few days ago, our prime minister was making a huge deal about being in the USA and talking to the president of the USA about trade. Wow. I'm in the Oval Office talking with the president. This is a man who screwed the country out of a national broadband network. Now, the tariff war has been announced. It's being reported that Australia may be exempt. You do know the only reason the Australian government supported and sent troops to the Iraq War was a promise of access to the U.S. beef market. So, yeah, place tariffs on Australian goods and see what happens. Probably nothing. Our politicians are pretty gutless. Looks like we're living in really interesting times. Signed, Robert from Oz. Well, I did my part. I found out, well, my old winter boots that I had to try to keep from losing feeling in my feet during the winter here in the studio had pretty much given up the ghost. I'd been wearing them for 7 years, and I finally broke down and ordered a pair. And I found out that instead of ordering Uggs from a California company that had their crap made in China, that I could actually order them from Australia. And they took a hell of a long time to get here, but they're excellent boots. Robert was very helpful. He gave him a call just to make sure they got the order. They got the money. And by the way, they were a lot less expensive than Uggs. Real double-faced Australian sheepskin with the fleece line. You know, it's they feel really good and really warm in a frozen studio like this. I mean, it's kind of brisk back here. We got a bit of a dusting of snow today, and the temperatures fell. I am, unfortunately, burning a bottle of gas right now. But I tried to do my part to help out the Australian economy. I guess it's a good thing. Well, no, I wouldn't have to worry about some sheepskin boot tariff. Well, as long as they're not making them out of steel or aluminum, I guess I'm okay. Oh, my God. Doesn't have to be this difficult. Really doesn't. And so we're at the end of the filibobster. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And, well, we have $200 to raise, and I was hoping, like, you know, by the end of the hour, I'd say, hey, we're done, so I don't have to mention, we've still got $200 to raise. It's tough that way sometimes. So hopefully that'll change over the course of the hour, and, It is Thursday, of course. That means we've got the Green News Report coming from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Your calls, if you choose to make them, 304-574-8178. And with some help from Brother Deacon Asa, we got the toll-free number fixed. You can use that if you need us to pay the freight on the phone call. 844-843-4676. 844-THE-HORN. Now, you know, it doesn't affect, I mean, it won't make you not burn minutes on your cell phone or anything. We have that there for people who, like, have landlines and can't seem to, or have landlines and don't have some sort of long-distance dialing plan or anything. But anyway, however you want to reach the program, 304-574-8178 or 844-THE-HORN, or Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, They all come into the same machine, so it's not like I can... someday, that's another thing, you know, new phone system. But as long as we keep having days where we struggle to knock down the daily fundraising goal, that's a, it's a long-term ambition. Anyway, let's take a break and see how the rest of the program is going to shake out. I'm Bob. This is The Horn. It's Thursday, March 8, 2018.
We don't have to accept hideous sacrifices that harm the poorest among us.
We need governments, our opinion, to put a price on carbon.
Stark contrast on climate between U.S. and Europe at Energy Industry Conference. Bad news for elephants, good news for U.S. electric grid powered by clean solar and wind. Plus,
as the Arctic experiences one of its warmest winters ever, Europe has experienced one of its coldest.
The Arctic just had its warmest winter on record, and polar scientists are kind of freaking out.
All of that freaking out and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
They do lie to us repeatedly about global warming, and then it's global cooling, and then it's global.
Yeah.
The ice age is coming, Time magazine had. Then the earth is going to blow up and burn up, and now they just call it global whatever.
No, they don't, Sean Hannity. Stop lying, and please get some new shtick. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, as Sean Hannity continues to use the same lies year after year after year, you have actual new news from the Arctic, and it's not very good.
No, it's not. And it is now official. The Arctic just had its warmest winter on record. That's according to the scientists at the U.S. National Snow and Ice Data Center, who say that it is likely caused by global warming. Sea ice hit the lowest winter extent ever recorded. Temperatures in the Arctic are closer to those typically seen in the month of May, and it's kind of freaking out polar scientists. U.S. scientist Mark Sorrell called the conditions, quote, unprecedented and crazy, crazy stuff.
You're saying the temperatures in the Arctic in March are like the temperature is usually in May?
Yeah.
Wow.
What happens in the Arctic, of course, doesn't stay in the Arctic. The loss of sea ice in the Arctic has been linked to changes in the jet stream causing extreme weather events. While the Arctic is experiencing its warmest winter ever, Europe is experiencing one of its coldest winters ever. And the northeastern U.S. is seeing back-to-back intense winter storms.
Don't tell Sean Hannity.
Meanwhile, stark contrasts on the global energy transition were on display between the U.S. and Europe at the big SARA Energy Industry Conference in Houston this week. In a rambling speech, Energy Secretary Rick Perry touted the surge in U.S. fossil fuel exports and called for making fossil fuels cleaner.
I call it the new energy realism. We would welcome and help lead, for that matter, a global alliance of countries willing to help make fossil fuels cleaner rather than abandoning them.
Man, when did Rick Perry become such a drama queen?
Oh, he was always that way. Not surprisingly, Perry did not mention climate change, but Europe-based oil companies are going in the opposite direction. Right after Perry spoke, the CEO of Royal Dutch Shell said the world, quote, has to change because climate change will be so disruptive. The CEO of British Petroleum, Bob Dudley, called for efficiently managing what he was calling the global energy transition to meet emissions cuts under the United Nations Paris Climate Agreement. Dudley also called for governments to put a price on carbon emissions that cause dangerous global warming.
We need all sectors of the economy to bring emissions down, and consumers as well. And we need governments, in our opinion, to put a price on carbon. That would enable us to do a whole lot more.
So the CEO of oil company BP is calling for a carbon tax?
Yep, that's right.
Again, don't tell Sean Hannity or Rick Perry.
Meanwhile, some bad news for elephants. The Trump administration's Fish and Wildlife Service has quietly announced that it will now allow the importation of endangered elephant body parts from African nations on a case-by-case basis, a reversal of President Trump's statements earlier this year that he would keep the Obama-era ban on such trophy imports.
Well, you know how those forgotten men and women in the Midwest love their elephant trophy hunting.
But some good news, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has unanimously rejected the Trump administration's attempt to block a lawsuit led by 21 young people who are suing the federal government for failure to act on climate change. The ruling means that the children's case brought by the nonprofit environmental law group Our Children's Trust can now go forward in federal court. Finally, a new study of decades of U.S. weather data has calculated that solar and wind energy alone could reliably supply 80% of all U.S. electricity demand. By investing in system-wide upgrades to the electric grid and deployment of battery storage, which, by the way, would also create jobs, the U.S. could have emissions-free clean electricity by mid-century.
Clean energy and jobs.
Yep.
Wrong kind of energy. Wrong kind of jobs, I guess.
For the Trump administration.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Well, at least they didn't use dust in the wind. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to the phones here in just a second. Please stay on hold. Don't go anywhere. But this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and, well, this is pretty thorny. So we've talked a bit here on the program about the West Virginia teachers' strike. Well, there's been it's been most contentious. And, among other things, teachers have been reaching out to their elected members of the legislature. Now, a lot of those, because they're in the majority, are Republicans. So one teacher reached out to Senator Sue Klein of Wyoming County, West Virginia. And asked her about supporting the teachers. I'm going to read to you, and it's not going to be easy, the response of the said Sue Klein, state senator, Republican, maggot, to this teacher. Date, March 4th, 2018, 8:13:25 p.m. Do you think that none of us has families, it children to school? We all have children, grandchildren, and family who are teachers, comma, principals, with an L-E-S, and done even superintendents. How do you justify thinking you batikutigud? YIUBATECTGD. Only people who have a interest in this space, and I'm make $20,000. Space, period. I am not beholden to any lobbyist or special interest. I am a person of great Charles Ted ABC honesty who has lived by Liverskbove. LIVRCSBOVE reproach until the teachers degraded me and slandered me and hurt my children and Brad children by bullying me and them making no fun of them talking down to them calling me Terriblemains, Terriblemains. Terriblemains, in front of them and at them. Who among you can justify this for a pay raise? We know you are underpaid, and we are working to rectify that, but it's been neglected so long by the other party in power, INPOWRR. For over 90 years, it can't be undo overnight. And who among you can justify taking from others for yourself? There is not enough money for 5% to give everyone, and even at 4% for everyone, it is taking from commerce, which means how budbidi. It is taking from tourism, which means jobs. It may even be taking away from Medicaid, which means seniors and children. How can you justify that? We are doing what you sent the Republican Party here to go be responsible steward of taxpayers' money. Sorry, my brain's hurting. And not spend what we don't have so your children and grandchildren will not have to pay us out of debt when the grow-up ABC have no jobs and still have to leave the state. We have to build our tax base to grow and prosper,
And that's what we are doing. And you all are fighting us and trying to destroy us.
God bless you.
Get Outlook for iOS. I read that word for word. That's a real live, no kidding member of the Senate of the state of West Virginia complaining that she only makes $20,000 for 6 weeks of work per year and gets that same PEIA health insurance coverage that is slowly bankrupting the teachers and still hasn't been fixed and won't be fixed. But probably the most fascinating part of that is the tell where she confesses that there's no way that they will seek a solution to the problem that doesn't involve them trying to pit the teachers against the rest of the state. But, you know, you can talk as shitty as you want to one of your constituents, a voter, and as long as you say, God bless, then that's capital G, capital B, little y, U, God bless you, at the end, well, if you told them to go chini themselves up in the body of the note, that's okay, because God bless you. And again, I'm going to ask the question that I asked before. This Republican majority did not get its hands on the reins of power through some sort of bloodless coup. They were put in office. There are 20,000 teachers. Teachers are active, generally pretty politically active. That's not 20,000 guaranteed Democratic votes. They could not be in office if it were. So the question is, will the teachers learn? Or will they say, God bless the Republicans. They gave us our raise. You know, them Democrats never did. Kind of got to wait till November to find that out. Or will a bunch of Bible-banging gospel sharps convince enough people to go to the polls because, you know, if them Democrats get in, we're all going to have to eat fetuses. And then there's the West Virginia State Police, the most coddled, pampered little princelings on the state budget this side of the head coaches of basketball and football at West Virginia and Marshall Universities. They get to take their cruiser home every night with them. They get to drive it to work and they get to drive it home. The gas they drive it to work on and the gas they drive it home on is paid for. Their bullets are paid for. Their guns are paid for. They get an allowance for their uniforms. If they serve in the military, their military service is counted toward their pensions. And they got a 5% raise, too, without having to lift a finger. They just climbed right up on the backs of the teachers and rode it all the way to a 5% raise, and they were making more money on average than the teachers were to start with. Let that one roll around a little bit, too. We pay people empowered to kill other people more money than we pay people empowered to teach children. And there you go. Got to pay attention, Scott. Scott and Punky with a note. Huh? I didn't quite catch the name of the author of the previous somewhat scrambled message, but it's obviously by a recent grad of the Donald Trump School of Elocution and Composition. On the other hand, it may be an example of the day's output that day. The iChart Manufacturing Factory's late shift got a hold of some bad acid. Oh, okay. No, that's... You really... You earned a cowbell with that one, Scott. Bad acid. No kidding. Sue Klein, S-U-E-C-L-I-N-E, Sue Klein, upstanding Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian Republican, member of the West Virginia State Senate,
from Wyoming County. That's who. And let's run along now to Colorado Springs and check in with Kevin. Hey, Kevin. Oh, wrong button. Sorry. I'll be right there. Don't leave. Hey, Kevin.
Can you hear me now?
The only reason I couldn't hear you before, Kevin, is because I pushed the wrong damn button. But, yeah, I got you.
Yeah, well, he probably pushed the wrong button, too, so. That was an interesting letter. That person sounds like they need to go back to remedial first grade.
Hey, it certainly
maybe
made
kindergarten.
Me, made me feel like I need to go to the liquor store.
I know. Between that and Sean Hannity's global whatever, you know, we are in good shape with Republicans at the head of the country. We have no problems whatsoever. If you can elect a state senator that doesn't have that level of acumen to write a document, and if she can't spell it, ask someone who can. You know, we're in worse shape than I thought.
Well, Kevin, I hate to be a little ray of sunshine, but we're in worse shape than you thought.
Yeah, I know. I did go to the caucuses last Tuesday night out here in Colorado.
How'd that go?
So that was a interesting deal. Jewel Polis and a woman by the name of Kerry Kennedy, who was our state treasurer, I believe, are two of the five candidates that were on the ballot for governor. And we'll see what happens with it. Got the county convention in 3 weeks, and then the state convention in a month or so, and then they'll have the primaries in June. So I don't know. You know, it's a long process out here. We don't just name two people to face off in the primary and one swell. You know, one boat. We got to do it in stages. So, but I made the point of telling people I want the most electable candidate there is, along with the most progressive candidate there is. And to go on to the county assembly to see if they can get on the state ballot for the primary. So I'm hopeful that the Republican will not win the gubernatorial election this year, but we will just have to see the level of turnout by the Democrats.
Let me ask you a question.
I'll be satisfied.
Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question, Kevin. Even if a Republican wins, even if you got a Republican majority in both houses of the state house, would they roll back the cannabis legalization? I'm just curious. I mean, that's not a smart-ass question. I'd really like to know.
I don't think so.
I mean, would they give up
the tax revenue it brings in?
Would they give up $200 million a year?
Being Republicans? No, I don't think so. No. And even our senator, Republican Senator Gardner, has said no to it and gone to Jeff Sessions and said, keep your dirty little hands out of our state cannabis. So, you know, I don't think it'll happen. I hope not. But that depends. If you got a very conservative Republican, like, well, I don't know, Walker Stapleton was mentioned as one of the candidates for the Republican side. If you got someone like him, possibly, they do it like Trump's trying to do it, you know, just, you know, I'm the governor and I say we don't do it anymore kind of thing. But that would cause an immediate uproar in the state house and senate, because I think Republicans or Democrats alike, they see the benefit of having legal cannabis and the revenue that brings into the state that they don't have to worry about, you know, ginning up if they didn't have the legal cannabis. So I would hope not.
So if you know, Kevin, do those tax revenues just go into the general fund, or are they earmarked for specific purposes?
Maybe a little of both. I'm not completely sure. I don't know.
Okay.
That's the short answer.
Well,
sure.
maybe someone will know in the research department.
I know Oklahoma is just spazzing out about Colorado having cannabis, legal cannabis, because it's bringing the marijuana into their state. Those people, you know, crossing state lines with the pot in their possession.
I love that. That's a great little voice you got that you used there, Kevin. Well played.
Yeah, well, I just, I don't know. Hearing Sean Hannity say global whatever during Brad and Desi's Green News report today, just, how can you argue with science? But yet they still do. You know, this is science we're talking about. The Arctic is melting, and it's proven it's melting. Documentation, everything, scientific research, and it's like that scientific research doesn't exist. And I'm just amazed that, you know, even the supposed educated on the Republican side don't look at that and say, well, we have a problem, but they seem to want to live in a fantasy world that they can do anything to the world, you know, to the environment, and it's not going to hurt anything other than make them more profit. And what we leave for our children and grandchildren's generations to come in 50, 60 years is their problem. And I don't know. I don't know how people can live with that, you know. I feel guilty if I waste water. And we don't really have a water crisis out here or anything, but, you know, you leave the water on a little bit too long while you're brushing your teeth or something like that. I feel guilty doing that. You know what I'm saying? And yet these people, they just, for them it's no problem. And I don't know what you do with it other than, as you said, and I heard you say it again yesterday, the Republican or the Democratic turnout in the 2018 election needs to be at 70%. And I know Trump is helping to energize that, but I don't know. Some of the emails I get, I don't know how, if people understand that. Even me, and I'm not saying it to promote myself, because there were others. We had a larger than average turnout for the caucus Tuesday night, and I was encouraged by that, because usually you're one of three people there, you know. So, but as a, since I've been eligible to vote, the only time I can ever remember missing an election to vote is when I didn't have access to a mail-in ballot, or I forget what you call it when you can't be there. What do you call it when you can't be there?
Absentee.
Absentee, thank you. And I remember that in the Navy. We were way over on the other side of the world, so I couldn't, you know, by the time the absentee ballot would have got back here, and that's the only time I can remember not voting, and that was in the, maybe the 80 or 80, yeah, it had to be the 80 election, so.
Well, this is just a technicality, but I'm curious, you know, you're visually impaired. How does that work in a caucus situation?
It was no problem for this local caucus, precinct caucuses, because he had to read the information aloud to people anyway. And then we had to sign the ballot, you know, our ballots or what that we voted, that kind of thing. And I just had someone help me with that. But it was no problem on a local level. I don't know about the county. Last time it was no problem when I went to the county assembly. I didn't have a problem with it, but there were a lot of people there, so I could just get someone to read something to me, you know. As far as voting, if you're voting in a primary or general election, that you actually have to report to a precinct to vote instead of by mail-in or absentee, they have a pretty good system that reads the ballot to me. So, you know. But it's all want to. To me, it's do you want to take the time to go out and vote? If I was a visually impaired person, going out to vote, when I actually have to go to somewhere to vote instead of a mail-in ballot, it cost me $7 round trip just for that privilege. And then to stand in line, you know, you get the idea. You know, it's a matter of want to. And I'm hoping that 70% of us will want to this year. I'm scared to death we're going to get a Republican because we've had 8 years of a moderate Democrat by the name of Hickenlooper. And you know how those things go. You get 8 years of one candidate in one party, and sometimes they, you know, people switch to the other party, and I'm scared that's going to happen. So I don't know what else to say. I'm just, if we go Republican in office, no, he won't do away with the cannabis, Bob, but he'll do away with such things as, not do away with it completely, but the cuts to Medicare and Medicaid Trump wasn't able to do on a local level, a Republican governor would try to do that. And that's what scares me. So.
Well, and I don't think that fear is misplaced.
No, no. Look at what you read that with the West Virginia teachers, and that's exactly the way they do it. They pit one group against another. So, you know, if they do that, they'll do that with us. Same way, same thing. The only, our, currently is our Colorado State Senate and House are formatted, we probably will still have a Democratic majority come January. I really don't see that slipping away, but again, you know, it's like the senators that signed on to that one Trump bill for deregulation of the banks. How many Democrats signed on to that?
No, what, 17, 18?
Yeah, and guess what? Senator Bennett from Colorado was one of them.
Yep.
So, you know, it's extremely scary when you think that 18 Democrats just went along with Trump on something like that. And, you know, Bennett supposedly was one of the bigger supporters of Obama when Obama was in there, but now he sees no problem with deregulating banks. And that leads one to
wonder
why
the thing is, Kevin, there's a it's not... You know, the name of the bill isn't the Bank Deregulation Bill of 2018. There are, you know, there are things in there that would cause somebody to, and this is the big one that they talk about. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm merely offering up what one of the arguments is that the the stringent regulations that are applied across the board to and even to smallish banks are freezing up credit in small communities and making it impossible for people to get loans. And so what this thing does is it takes that threshold from $50 billion up to $250 billion, and so it lets a lot of banks out of those more stringent requirements. But at the $250 billion level, the number of banks who would actually be regulated by the bill can probably be counted on two hands and leave out the thumbs.
Exactly.
So, I've called Manchin's office, calling Shelley Moore Capito's office is a waste of my precious finite time on the planet. But I've called Manchin's office. I've said, listen, this is unacceptable. This is not a good thing. This is not going to look good for you. In your reelection effort. But it's, we'll see how it plays out. But the problem is, they let it get past the 60 vote threshold. And that qualifies as, collaboration. But we're talking about banks, and they've probably if you follow the money, every one of those Democrats who voted in favor of closing debate on it is probably taking no small amount of money from the banks in their PACs and their treasuries and their treasury campaign war chests and what have you.
Yep, and that's the way I feel about Bennett, what probably is happening there. And I do get with the smaller cities and counties it affecting them, but surely you could have done something less damaging than raising it from what it was up to 250 million.
Billion, but yeah.
So that's my problem.
There's all kinds of other nastiness in it. It almost gives a pass for banks to engage in racial discrimination. It makes it more difficult for people to get redress against banks. I don't know if you caught the story the other day, but it turns out that Equifax actually their data breach affected a shit ton more people. That's a complicated legal mathematical term, shit ton, than originally thought. And there's still no accountability for Equifax. Me, I personally think that they should be, given the corporate death penalty for it. They just don't get to exist anymore.
Yep.
Because you want to talk about gaming the system. All these Republicans talk about how they love the free market. Well, in a free market situation, a lending determination is a roll of the dice. And if you want to lend money to Great Big Corporation of America, then the bank president needs to sit down and have a chat with the board or whatever, or go over their paperwork. But to have just to have an Equifax or any of these other reporting agencies out there making money off of people's data, which has value. No. For instance, Donnie, son of Donnie, dimwit, and then the dimwit himself were pissing and moaning on Twitter the other day about, theft of IP. I didn't do it. Oh, I was so close to responding on Twitter. IP, I thought the hookers peed. But intellectual property. Well, the fact of the matter is people's data about themselves is their property. But
right.
you're not going to see any Trumps or any Repiglickens or any of those 17 or 18 Democrats worrying about that.
Nope.
No, they're worried about a bootleg Taylor Swift disc coming out of somewhere in the interior of China. Because there's some real money behind that. You know, the folding type, the walking around, the kind that doesn't jingle. But yep. No, but your point's well taken. Kevin, it's good talking to you, my friend.
Bob, it was good talking to you, and we will talk to you again.
All right. You be there, I'll be here, okay?
We'll be here.
All right, later.
I'll try to be, anyway.
All right, take care, Kevin.
Take care.
Bye now. Bye-bye. It's our buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. And we are at 15 minutes to 8. We are an hour and 45 minutes into the program. $200 to raise and still at zero. Okay, so that's what that is. You know, I had it in the stack. I'm ready to go with it. The more revelations on the Stormy story. And that's not to say I'm not going to go into it, because this needs to get out into the universe for discussion. It turns out that back in 2013, and I'm sure Bob Mueller has all the skinny on it now, but back in 2013, Donald J. Trump inveigled himself, is that a word, into a dinner with a couple of high-rolling Russian oligarchs, namely Aras and Emin Aglarov. Also at dinner was a British publicist by the name of Rob Goldstone. They were having dinner at a place in Vegas. And in this case, what happened in Vegas didn't stay there. The old the pappy of the two Aglarovs is a big time real estate hustler. Meanwhile, his son is Popstar in Mother Russia, and Rob Goldstone is his publicist. So the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini invites himself to dinner with them, June 15th, 2013. Jot the date down, June 15th, 2013. And they're talking about the Miss USA contest. Well, they decided to have a dinner, a later dinner, to be held at a place called Cut. Now, this place called Cut was a restaurant at the Palazzo Hotel and Casino. That's the dinner we're talking about. And Michael Cohen, president, a Trump lawyer, was there. There were about a group of about 20 people. Another guy named Ike Kavaladze was there. He was the vice president of Aglarov's Crocus International. Back in 2000, the United States government identified Crocus International as just a filthy little pipeline for money laundering, something on the order of $1.4 billion coming out of Russia and Eastern Europe. Well, after the dinner at Cut, Trump, along with Emin and Goldstone and the reigning Miss Universe Olivia Culpo and the outgoing Miss USA Nana Merriweather, They all went to an after party. The after party was held at a joint called ACT, A-C-T. It was a little after midnight when they got there. Now, ACT had been under undercover surveillance by the Nevada Gaming Control Board and its landlord, the Palazzo, had also hired private eyes to keep an eye on the place. The Palazzo, of course, owned by Republican mega-donor Sheldon Adelson. So whatever it was, the after-party, it went on. But a few short months thereafter, a judge shut ACT down because of what the judge referred to as lewd and offensive performances. Now, there's nothing in here that says these lewd and offensive performances happened the night that Trump was there. But the thing is, they were a regular occurrence at ACT. Michael Isikoff and David Korn have the entire story if you want to go chase it down. But the thing is, in the court, in the process of the court proceedings that led to the closure of ACT, there was testimony put on about the lewd and offensive conduct that took place there, that had been witnessed there as a result of the undercover surveillance by the Nevada Gaming Control Board and the private eyes hired by the Palazzo, as owned by Sheldon Adelson, who went on, of course, to be a big supporter of Donald Trump. Now, when they heard that Trump was coming, according to the article by Isikoff and Korn, quote, the owners had also discussed whether they should prepare a special performance for the developer, perhaps a dominatrix who would tie him up on stage, or a little person transvestite Trump impersonator. You remember that famous photo of Trump standing next to an outrageously drag-queened up Rudy Giuliani? Remember that one? They did have a bunch of Diet Coke on hand for the Pumpkin Pasha. But here's where it gets a little weird. Okay, a lot weird. Among the club's regular acts cited by the judge, regular meaning it happened a lot, happened often, happened on a predictable basis, among the club's regular acts cited by the judge was one that was called Hot for Teacher. In the Hot for Teacher Act, Mom, Dad, you might want to get little Timmy and little Cindy out of the room if they're around. I'll give you a couple of seconds to do that. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Among the club's regular acts cited by the judge was one called Hot for Teacher, in which naked college girls simulate urinating on a professor. In another act, two women disrobe and then one female stands over the other female and simulates urinating while the other female catches the urine into wine glasses. Oh, really? Kind of makes you think that maybe
There really is something to that whole Moscow PP tape thing, doesn't it? At this little bash, they celebrated Trump's 67th birthday. And he made it clear that he wanted to do business with the oligarch Emin. And then at the end of the Miss USA broadcast the following night, he announced that he would hold Miss Universe pageant in Mother Russia and that he had signed a contract with the Aglarovs in front of the audience. 2 days after that, he went on Twitter, Trump did, and said he badly wanted to become Vladimir Putin's new best friend. Oligarch Emin then responded on Twitter, "Mr. at real Donald Trump, anyone you meet becomes your best friend, so I'm sure Mr. Putin will not be an exception in Moscow." Well, you know, I don't just do things. Thank you. Philip says, "Thanks for the countdown, Bob. I was sitting in the room with the kids. I'm not ready to explain why you shouldn't urinate on another person." No. David, meanwhile, in South Carolina, stands his subject line, drunk. "I would feel better about Donald Trump if he was drunk and not all diet coked up." I know the feeling. So we got that. We got the ongoing Stormy Daniels controversy, but it's probably about to disappear from the news cycle. Because there's big news out of South Korea this evening. A certain entente has been established between the South and the North. And the National Security Advisor of South Korea, Chung Wi-yong, and former Prime Minister Chung Un-chan spoke to the White House about the talks between the North and the South earlier this afternoon. Allegedly in the talks, the North Koreans said they would give up their nuclear program and their nuclear weapons if Donald Trump would sit down and face-to-face with Kim Jong Bad Golf Pants. Upon being told this, Marcus Aurelius then responded, "I'll be happy to meet with him. We'll meet with him by May." So I guess we've got, this is the early March, April, May. We got a couple of months of wondering just how bizarre this is going to be. The Pentagon, the people who are in charge of the military stuff, they weren't even in the loop. Mad Dog Jim Mattis, the defense secretary, sorry, Jim. We're not going to tell. No, you don't get to find out about this. You're just a schmuck who agreed to work for him, just like any other schmuck who works for him. No, Dimwit Donnie didn't even tell his own staff about it. Secretary of State Rexon Tillerson, clueless. In a statement issued by Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, she said, "President Trump greatly appreciates the nice words of the South Korean delegation and President Moon.
he will accept the invitation to meet with Kim Jong-un at a place and time to be determined. We look forward to the denuclearization of North Korea. In the meantime, all sanctions and maximum pressure must remain.
Should we open a betting pool on this? Where the talks will take place?
I got dibs on Moscow.
Although, from the looks of things, the Seychelles may have some possibility as well. But that's what's gonna suck all the air out of the room, and Stormy Daniels is just gonna disappear down the memory hole, and the maggots will scream that he is the great peacemaker of our time. If he doesn't get the world blown up first. I had a note about this earlier from Steve in New York. He said, so North Korea has offered to stop their nuclear program if Trump will meet with them. So he'll claim that that this had anything to do with him. So it was South Korea who did all the work regarding this. Why do I know this? Because we don't even have a South Korean ambassador. If any meeting between the crazy one and Kim happens, Kim will completely dupe and butter him up and knock the saffron Stalin on his ass without him even knowing it. Oh, it won't even be a fair fight. Meanwhile, Jim is standing by on the phone. Hey, Jim.
Good afternoon or good evening. How are you?
It's a great day to be a West Virginian, Jim.
You know, so first, I've got a strange story to tell you. I just received a video picture from my sister. She bought this type of device in which she could put her dachshund in it. And the dachshund goes for a miniature car, like bump car ride, except it's stationary.
Okay, that sounds a little bizarre.
I thought you'd think so. And, you know, I just said, well, just for the screen.
Well, there's a lot of fun dachshund videos out there. People apparently have a real high time with their German badger hounds.
I mean, this device costs at least about $500. I mean, it is one of these full scale plug in things, and I just wrote back to her and I just said, "Woof, good luck with."
All right, Lucy. I got okay. Let's see. DACHS.
Yeah. Now, first thing, you know, one thing I wanted to clear up here with you, I think I emailed you, as far as, like, military and police officers are concerned, and use of their professional vehicles, it's called domicile and duty. And it makes sense, because, you know,
It does make sense because you don't want him to have to drive to the station house and then get in his car and drive. No, I get that, but every time you turn around, the West Virginia State Police are squealing about how underpaid and underappreciated they are, and in this particular case, all they had to do was act like a tick on a hound, and sit there and go along for the ride. And there weren't any off-duty state police officers walking the picket lines with the teachers, make no mistake.
Oh, I'm sure there weren't. No. As a matter of fact, I'm sure they were just, saying, what are those people doing? They're interfering with my ability to really perform my duty safely. Why are they on the side of that road? Because, police do have this certain inferiority complex to anyone who they perceive has a lower education ability than they. They do. I mean, I worked in a police academy for a year and had to write lesson plans for them and able to write out a traffic report that would stand up in court. And this is the same thing.
Right, because literate was not their strong suit.
No, but in order to really do that, and I had to try to put it in this best way I could using, behavioral goals, objectives, and stuff like that, and using learning delivery systems to support such things so that you can realize that it was really in their best interest. But you could never get them to buy into that. and they hated my guts because they thought I was standing over their soldiers, you know, correcting their English and their grammar, the lack of which is obvious. And even when I would give them a test, you know, I was a federal testing officer for the Army and the Air Force for Dante's. And you know, you have to start tests precisely and end them precisely. And they get all hot-headed up about that. And I would begin that test on my mark, go. And that really would set them free. Oh, they were just furious about someone telling them where they could start to do something and stop to do something. You know, in spite of their training that they had at the police academy.
And the West Virginia State Police are the most highly trained law enforcement in this state. There's no doubt about it. And I'm not saying they're bad people, and I'm not saying they don't deserve to be paid. But they, you know, we've got teachers who pay out of their own pockets to buy materials for their students, pay out of their own pockets to feed their students.
Oh, I know. I know from personal experience because
and somehow the idea of the state police just sort of riding along like a flea on a bird dog, and getting a raise out of it without having to do anything, except you know draw their breath.
I know.
And it's a little bit offensive, Jim.
And I just see Sam ride by at night in an air-conditioned police car. They want to say, little girl, you want to go for a ride with me?
Oh, dear God. Yeah. And of course, every so often, the people of the state of West Virginia wind up paying a couple of million dollars out because a state trooper has taken the Constitution into his own hands and beaten somebody half to death or all the way to death. And, well, you know, that's just the price you pay for having police.
Well, let's hope they don't try to pick up somebody and go to a graveyard to do the nasty. But, you know, all that being said, going just back to this thing with Kim Jong-un and Trump, now let me ask you something. If you were Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump said that he wanted to denuclearize your country, would you do it? I wouldn't.
If I'm a rational person, and I know the history of dear friends of the United States, like Manuel Noriega and Saddam Hussein. No way. And then there's the non-dear friend of the United States, Muammar Gaddafi, who disarmed just like we asked him to, and then. What was the phrase that was used? We came, we saw, he died. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, even as excessive as the reign of Gaddafi was, and Saddam Hussein fell in the same category, at least I think they have been a more orderly system of government than they do now. Now, I have not kept up with the Middle East since, you know, all that went down. But I understand that it's pretty turbulent. It's very turbulent over there.
I think that's probably maybe the understatement of the evening, but yes.
Yeah, ever since the Arab Spring and all this stuff broke out, and under Gaddafi, they had certain benefits, well, that they don't have now. It's crazy.
No, what they've got is chaos.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy as Gaddafi was with all of his women protectors and special SS women troopers.
Tents in the desert that we flattened with a bomb and killed his baby daughter. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's pretty disruptive. But it's like, and as far as Stormy Daniels is concerned, or whatever her name really is, it would appear to me as though this is going to be another ace in Trump's corner. Because that base of his says, oh, well, he had an affair.
Oh, look at her. She's hot. Yeah, he must be some kind of manly man to be able to have sex with a hot woman like that. I wish I could.
He'd be abnormal if he couldn't. And, you know.
But she does have.
That would go the way of all those two.
But, Jim, at the risk of being gross about it, she apparently does have dick pics.
Have what?
She's got dick pics.
Dick pics.
Dick pics. D-I-C-K-P-I-C-S. Dick pics. She's got...
What is that now? Tell me.
Welcome to the 21st century, Jim. Come on.
I have never heard that used. I never have.
You lead a sheltered existence, Jim.
You know I don't either, and no, I haven't. Dick pic. In other words...
Photographs taken of one's Johnson with a telephone.
No, I haven't heard that because I've never done that.
Are you kidding me?
Please. No, I have never done that.
Well,
and I've never even thought about doing it.
Well, that's how adolescents court now, and a whole shit ton of grown-ups too. They take pictures of their genitals and they send them to each other via telephone.
Okay, I heard that be done, but I didn't know the term for it. Okay?
Well, the generic term is sexting. But yeah, there is a subgenre specifically referred to as dick pics. Oh, wait a minute. Philip, are the kids back in the room? Son of a gun. I'm sorry. I just had a lovely note from Philip saying, first and only contributor to the program this evening, this donation is to thank you for saving me from a week-long conversation about why human beings are not toilets. Happy thorn in the side, and I think I just screwed everything up by saying that phrase like three times in the space of 90 seconds. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well.
Daggum it.
I'm
fine. I tried to be hip and with it when I was a younger person and stuff, but honest to God, I'm finding out that I apparently missed out on a whole bunch because I saw that scene. I think maybe I mentioned it on air. I don't know. I'm still kind of scratching my head about it, but there's a scene in that Academy Award nominated film, Call Me By Your Name, where the young boy in the film has a slow and lingering relationship with a ripe peach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've heard of that. I hadn't.
He had a slow and lingering relationship with, was it a graduate student?
No, with a ripe peach.
A ripe peach.
Yeah, it's not a euphemism. He's holding a peach. He sticks his thumb in it. Wallers out the pit, and then he dribbles the juice over his young, pubescent, hairless chest, and then has a relationship with the hollowed out peach.
Well, they've done that with watermelons too. Yeah, that was common in the old South.
Well, you could have knocked me over.
To have one served up at the table.
You could have knocked me over with a feather. I mean, a peach?
Well, that doesn't speak very well for him, but that's okay. I'm not going to go there. But, yeah, I've heard that be done with watermelons and stuff like that, yeah.
Well, I'd heard about the watermelon thing, but... It's apparent. Oh, I'm betraying myself as a fogey. I mean, I wasn't like ew, nasty, ew, turn it off, ew, make it go away. It was just like, well, son of a bitch, this is cinematic art now. And I'll be dipped.
Well, I mean, you know, those types of activities. I mean, you've heard of a sheep farmer with his high boots and stuff like that. They go back and back and back. The objects of their affection varies, but it's the same old story. for their version of love and glory. So there it is.
Well, that's a very nice Casablanca reference thrown in there, Jim. I'm going to give you a little jingle for that.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, you're more than welcome. But I find out what emojis are, right?
Emojis.
E-M-O-J-I-S, emojis.
Bob, I'm not sure. And
okay,
I'm not
so
trying to
so
you out.
No, no. So, like on a telephone, on a smartphone,
right?
When you go to send messages and stuff, there are little tiny pictures you can send of smiley faces and like lipstick prints and some very innocuous things have apparently been completely sexualized now, because apparently it's a thing to refer to one's male anatomy by using the emoji for an eggplant,
and
to refer to the female anatomy by using the emoji for a peach.
I see.
It's sort of like a pornographic hieroglyphics. Pornoglyphics. What? Pornoglyphics. There's our word. They're pornoglyphics.
Okay. Right. Well, you know, Bob, with all being said, considering the stuff I've seen in my life back in the 70s, New York, places like that, some of the places I've told you about, I guess these things here would be kind of, you know, nondescript compared to what I actually saw. I mean, you know, that's just... I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but I've seen a lot of strange stuff. Now, as far as the peach is concerned and stuff like that, I guess people are going to use these new electronic devices for all types of purposes, that's for sure. And, you know, there it is. So, but I had no idea he called me by your name that young man did that. And like I say, I saw the trailer, but I never saw that in the trailer. You must have picked that one up on the, I don't know where you picked it up at.
I picked it up, just there's a clip out there on the interweb tubes.
Okay, it's stuff out there. So much is out there, that's for damn sure. However, that movie didn't get even an honorable mention, did it? Or if it did,
well, I mean, it got nominated, and they say the nomination is the real honor.
Oh, yeah. Well, it appears to me as though it would be a very touching and intimate type of adolescence, really realizing his own sexuality and having that enhanced by an older male.
Yeah, it's basically it's about a 17-year-old boy who gets into a relationship with a 24-year-old man.
Right. Okay. Well, that's, you know, that is reasonable. That is reasonable. A 7 years difference. I mean, you know, let's take it back to the Greeks and how they did their things with older and younger men. You know, same thing. You know, no problem. But it's just amazing how people are using these newly acquired electronic devices Incidentally, I saw something on Facebook today, and it said, here is a person who has an $800 phone using to call on the check, using to check up on the amount he has in his EBT card.
Yeah, that's one of those things you see out there that are geared toward, you know, poverty shaming. It's not like the person had $800 laying around and ran out and bought a phone. Phones are accessible for a lot of people if they're willing to pay $20, $25, $30 a month
for
24 or 36 months. But that stuff's out there to be found all over the place.
True. I mean, the most greatest technical achievement I have right now is just my Kindle, and it's just a regular smartphone. That's all I found, you know, the need for.
Well, so, in terms of like finding a job, keeping a job, getting a job, being in contact with the job and everything, it's almost impossible to get along without a mobile phone now.
But, you know, what do we do before we had them? I mean, you know, people, the world continued to turn on its axis. Business continued to function.
Right, but that's also to a large extent prior to the rise in ubiquity of the Internet. You know, that's a time when there were phone books and newspapers and, you know, a variety of media that was not, you know, electronically delivered.
And, you know, sometimes I look back on those days with a certain degree of half of nostalgia because things were so quick and accelerated that people, before they communicated instantly, they had time to think about what they were going to say. And they had time to assess the impact of what they did say and how what they did say would be received. Does that make any sense?
Well, yeah. There's a new vogue for looking back fondly at the days when we weren't all carrying around enough computing power in our pockets to put a man on the moon, which every one of these devices is.
Exactly. But it's the price of progress, but still.
Well, yeah, and it's hell on human interaction. There's an ad out there on TV, I forget who it's for, in which four individuals are sitting around in a living room at what would have once upon a time been like a neighborly get-together or a small party or whatever, and the voiceover says, or, you know, you could put down your phones and talk to each other. And all four of the people look up and break the fourth wall and look at the camera and go, nah, and go back to staring at their phones.
Yeah, you're probably, yeah, that's right, absolutely. The message of that particular cartoon is very clear. I don't know if the world is, but you know, is the world any better now than it was then when you add up everything? I mean, is it? I just wonder.
Well, is that the question, or is the question, is the world worse?
Well, I was going to say that, too. It appears to me as though the situation...
I mean, this program does not exist without the Internet.
Well, I understand that.
And it would be an almost unbearably dull program if the only thing I had to work with was a copy of the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Charleston Gazette, and the Beckley Register Herald.
Well, yeah, I know who you go, but you sound like you know who.
I know.
But, I mean, you can't help but think about these things. You know, it's great when they go, it's wonderful when the impact is good, and success is achieved. What makes you think in the other direction is when things don't go too well, and it would have been better had the communication not been so quick.
Well, there's a brilliant essay that was written by he's kind of a right winger, but his point was brilliant. It was well made. Read it, God, probably something coming up on 20 years ago. Not Mark Halperin, the perv who worked for NBC and ABC, but Mark Helprin, H-E-L-P-R-I-N, who wrote books like Memoir from Ant Proof Case and Soldier of the Great War and A Winter's Tale. And I've never been able to find it again, but he wrote an essay comparing a modern with someone in the more or less telegraph age.
Right.
And makes a compelling argument that guy probably had a better life than the modern does. Because inevitably what happens with all of these devices, they get used to make us stay connected in many instances to the workplace in non-work hours, to the point that enlightened governments have passed laws saying once you clock out, the office is not allowed to contact you on your mobile phone.
Mm-hmm.
that your time is, in fact, your own. Now, of course, the American economy would collapse if we did something like that. And,
but you know that isn't true because they will contact you 24/7.
And my own existence, you know, I'm constantly reading. I'm constantly selecting stories that I think will make for compelling conversation. And that's something that goes on pretty much throughout my day, unless I'm operating
a
motor vehicle.
Quality. That's content quality. That's something you need to do. That's one of your major, you know, skills and abilities to be able to do that.
Right, and it's that or reading today's episodes of Little Abner and Prince Valiant into the microphone.
Well, yeah, I think you're quite right there. I think we both.
And then Jubilation T. Cornpone says, "No."
I know. You know, personally, I have retired, and I have withdrawn from the use of a lot of these things because a lot of these things I had access to when I worked, people did not have access to them.
Oh, no. When I started at CNN, Jim, we typed on computers, and there was a great big terrifying mainframe that brought in all the wire services,
uh-huh.
And it was a dark cathode ray tube square little box that weighed a ton. The monitor was, and it blinked white letters on a black background and made and after about it, you know, 4 or 5 hours, your eyeballs would begin to feel like they were just going to fry out of your head.
All right.
When we moved from Techwood Drive to CNN Center, the old Omni. It was pretty much the same monitors, but boy, it was a big damn deal because they had a triple redundancy mainframe.
Right.
And still, though, we had metal storage cabinets full of electric typewriters. Because if shit went sideways, then we were expected to haul out the typewriters and bang out our newscasts on triplicate carbon paper.
Oh God, I hate those things. But quickly, I don't know what year was this, like back in the early 80s?
No, that would be 1986, 1987.
See, we didn't even have that in 1980, 81.
No, it was typewriters.
That was gone. That was gone with DOD. We didn't have to do that. I mean, as far as filling a form out was concerned, we had form flow, all that stuff. We had this stuff about 7 years earlier before it became accessible to the modern market.
Yeah, and if the power went down, instead of having all the wire services coming in through the mainframes, you would literally, you know, you'd go over to the UPI or the AP wire or whatever, and rip and write.
Right. Well, you know, if you were given a typewriter and if you didn't mind using carbon, that was fine. I had my share of that back in.
Oh, I could raise hell on a Smith Corona Selectric.
I bet you could.
I mean, I banged away on that thing. I was like, I made that sucker sound like I was the last correspondent out of Saigon in 1975. Just you know. Because I missed out on that touch typing class. I felt like if I wasn't beating the shit out of it, I wasn't working.
Well, they had their place. They had their day. Now they're gone. And now they're just things you see in a museum these days. But it's just amazing how technology has affected our professional and our personal lives. And people have used it quite well, and they've abused it quite well, too. That's for sure.
Well, it has certainly gone a long way toward toxifying our body politic. But by the same token, at this time period I'm talking about, and this is, you know, this is what makes him so great at what he does, Malloy was It you'd turn on Malloy at 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night on WSB in Atlanta, and you were pretty sure he had read every newspaper printed in English that day, and maybe some that weren't.
True. I don't know how Mike does that, or how he did it.
Well, he's a rare and genius talent.
Yeah. Truly, he does, and he is, he's still going at it. I think he has to take more time off, and I think his, I really think that his, you know, and he will admit that all those years of doing that has really taken its toll on it.
You know, this isn't me crawling up on the cross, and I've only been doing it in this format for 15 years. I mean, I came back to it as a fill-in guy for Dr. Bill. But it is mentally exhausting.
Well, you better believe it is.
And if you're doing it as anything other than just rank entertainment. See, I don't think this is exhausting for somebody like the Hannity job or Flush Flemball. Okay, it's not. They just get on. Somebody opens the mic for them, and then they lie for 3 hours.
True.
And say whatever comes into their head, and who gives a shit? Because they know that their audience has the collective IQ of a bag of fucking peat moss.
You know, Bob, I used to listen to these people just for a comparative note. And the distance between true and untrue became so vast, it got to the point that I could not even listen to these people anymore.
Oh, no, it's horrible. And, you know, but the thing is, it's a winning proposition. And, you know, just as a general principle, and I'm not comparing myself with anybody, I'm just talking about what my experience here is. One of the reasons you're never gonna find a bunch of clips of me on YouTube, is because I have a hard time saying my name in less than 5 minutes, and the collective American consciousness is 20 seconds tops, and so you've got to be able to do 20 second hot takes, not thinky pieces.
And that is so regrettable.
But
our collective consciousness is that limited.
But there's a lesson to be made or to be learned out of this too, Jim, and that's this. And I will apply this to left or right, okay?
To whom?
To either the left or the right.
Okay.
If anybody is giving you, and I say this because I don't think I do this. If anybody is giving you pat, easy answers to complex problems.
Those.
My friends, we could make America great again if we could just do something about the Negroes. Okay? We would have full employment if only it weren't for all these illegal aliens. Anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Or on the other side of it, dude, there's absolutely nothing to the Russia thing. It's just a bunch of... It's just a bunch of McCarthyite neoliberal shills. Okay.
Oh, well, I know that too.
Anybody who does that is probably lying to you.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, speaking of him, I know you got people who'd like to talk to you. What about this guy that... you do such a good imitation of him. God, you do. This guy Bolton... What in the hell is going on here with him?
I don't know which part you're referring to. You're talking about old. You're not talking about Michael Bolton.
Well, the one.
How am I supposed to live without you? No, you're talking about porn stash John Bolton, right?
The one that Trump didn't want because he wouldn't shave his mustache. I think that's the one.
Yeah.
The one who wants to blow the hell out of North Korea.
Yeah, look, he's always wanted to nuke somebody. It's apparently the only thing that gives him anything resembling sexual gratification is thinking about nuking.
Well, he apparently his influence is gaining ascendancy.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And I think if I'm, now correct me if I'm wrong.
And if the only thing keeping him away from the levers of power is his fucking mustache, Jim, I hope he grows it out to a handlebar that'll compete with the cowboy in the Big Lebowski's.
or Yosemite Sam. No, but Trump doesn't like the mustache. Yeah, there's some character in there that Trump would not hire because he had a mustache. He thought that made him look bad. It was not in, you know, Donald Trump's repertoire of what makes a person be chic and well-groomed. And I think they were referring to Bolton today. I referred to Ian Masters last night, actually, and he was discussing it.
I haven't seen anything on Bolton cross my eyes any
okay,
time lately,
okay.
But I got a piece of breaking news. Apparently this evening in the Senate of the state of West Virginia, Jim, the Senate Judiciary took up HB 4345, amending the Medical Cannabis Act.
Well, it's something they admit it the correct way.
Let's hope, yeah. Because as it is, and this is one of those moments of sublime stupidity of which only a government is capable, you know, last session they passed medical marijuana in this state, but they made sure to pass
right.
it so that nobody could actually smoke it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You got to use a pill or a tincture or an oil or... you know, something you stick up your ass or who knows. But you can't smoke it. And no edibles either, you bastards. So then on top of that, it legalized it some date in 2019, which meant that everybody who got busted for any of those things between then and 2019 remains a criminal. Now, the question is, after... I mean, look at what California did. They turned around and said, okay, we legalized everything. Now we're going to wipe out the pot convictions for everybody.
Well, that's reasonable.
Well, it's absolutely reasonable because why should you be convicted and be made a criminal in 2018 for something that's going to be completely legal in 2019 if you fall under the heading of people who... deserve, and that's the other part of the bill that's so stupid. There's got to be a determination that you deserve.
I wonder how they've used the principle of ex post facto.
I honestly don't know. I mean, generally speaking, an ex post facto law is a law that's passed to make something wrong that you've already done, as opposed to make something right. So, I don't know if there would be a nexus with the ex post facto clause in the Constitution.
Well, there would have to be some type of dialogue between that. I mean, because you're talking about, even though two different opposite effects, you're talking about effects that are very similar. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I do, or maybe it smacks of unequal protection to wipe out somebody's pot bust and not wipe out somebody's, say, opioid bust.
Right. Exactly. Well, I hope that they will really get together and do a better job than they have done with so many things in the past. And like I said before, and I'm not trying to harp on this thing, if they could just get rid of that damn federal law that encompasses the entire country, a lot of problems would be solved.
Well, you know, eventually that will be happened. That will happen. That will be done.
I mean, you know, why
it's going to be a while in the future, and it's damn sure never going to happen under a Republican majority.
But goddammit, why can't they apply the same thing they did to that as they did to Prohibition?
Well, hell, Prohibition was harder to accomplish because that was a constitutional amendment, Jim.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, if they could eliminate the constitutional
because there's
amendment.
A lot of money in marijuana prohibition. That's the why of it.
Well, yeah, we talked about that the other night, too. Lots of money in it. Lots of money in it. It's very complex. Unfortunately, I wish I wish we could be Alexandrian and cut it with one sword stroke. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Well, listen, my friend, you've had enough time with me, and appreciate you taking my call.
Oh, my pleasure. It was a great conversation, Jim.
And it's enthralling me with your acumen on some of these details.
My acumen, yeah, sure.
Yes. And on that note,
now the liquor store closes at 10. I can't get in the acumen until after 9.
But you don't drink anymore, do you?
No, but I tell you what, I'm sorely tempted.
Well, Bob, listen. Alcohol can do more than built and can to justify the ways of God to man.
Ain't that the damn truth?
I'll leave you on that.
And I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy.
Well, there you go. Absolutely. Because if you don't, you may have to end up having one. Good night.
All right. Later. Bye now.
Bye.
That's our buddy Jim. He's been in rare form lately. And again, thanks go out to Philip, who is all alone this evening, but has taken the fundraising goal down to $185 this evening. Thank you very kindly. And I was, and Philip did let me know I didn't ruin anything because when I gave out the little Timmy and little Cindy warning, Philip went to Cannes and told me subsequently when I was worrying about the words dick pics just ruining all my good works, he said, the headphones are on now. I learned my lesson. Continue with the dick pic conversation, Bob. No, let's don't and say we didn't. And at least I'm not the only geezer out here. Scott and Punky with a note from a little bit ago. Peach fucking? American youth shakes head sadly. What's wrong with a sheep? Now, see, I'm gonna get hateful email out of that. P.S., he's only kidding. P.S., tell Jim there's a state law on the books in Georgia that prohibits a man from crossing a sheep meadow in lace-up boots with the boots not fully laced up. Apparently some guys would place the sheep's hind legs into the unlaced boots so it wouldn't run away during kinky... Let's go back to vegetables and fruits. Yeah. Scott said Siskel and Ebert are spinning in their graves. Carnal knowledge between teens and produce. Cleaning women bumping uglies with an experimental man trout. And who says movies aren't your best entertainment? Maybe. Movies aren't your best entertainment. And Flavio asked me, did you forget the movie American Pie? No, but that was a, you know, madcap, wainy, zany, wacky, screwball comedy. This was a tender, touching, coming-of-age film that involved a date with a peach. Mm. It's like that old line. I remember losing my virginity very well. I was alone at the time. Now you just add dot, dot, dot with a peach. Well, thank you, Marty. Hateful email, all caps. Okay, well, now we've got that taken care of. Jesus. All right, a little bit of time left in the program. If you want to engage in conversation, you're mighty welcome to. It's about 17 minutes before the hour. Apart from that, what else do we have? At least it won't involve fruit. No, it involves Kris Kobach, which I think is arguably worse. So there's a lawsuit going on. The American Civil Liberties Union has filed a voting rights case against the state of Kansas. Okay? And it has to do with voter registration and access to the ballot. That Well, the long and short of it is that Chris Kobach, in being sued by the ACLU, elected to represent himself instead of letting the Attorney General's office, he's Secretary of State of Kansas, he decided to let to represent himself instead of letting the Attorney General's office represent him. And he has made a complete, not that it was very difficult to do, ass of himself. A federal judge, Judge Julie Robinson, is having to walk him through even the most basic elements of trial practice. They know nothing about evidence. They know nothing about civil procedure. And I suspect that while it looks like a circus and Kobach looks like an idiot, what they're trying to do is make a case that is so full of fumbles and stumbles and bumbles and errors that instead of simply bouncing it out on appeal, it'll find its way, sort of stagger upwards toward the Supreme Court of the United States, where the where dead-eyed John Roberts and Slappy Thomas and that Kennedy guy and Sammy Bad Breath Alito and Ann's boy Neil can get their hands on it and enshrine a little bit more voter suppression into American constitutional law. But Jesus, it has been a pathetic thing to behold, according to the reports. It has been described as tragic and pathetic. Really interesting to watch all the mistakes he was making in court. It's a real lulu. His co-counsel is the chief legal counsel for the Secretary of State's office, and co-counsel is the Assistant Deputy Secretary of State for Legal Services, and neither one of them knows shit from shinola about running a trial. For instance, on one day of the trial, Becker was trying to question a witness . The witness being a co-president of a local chapter of the League of Women Voters in Kansas, and asked this long, tormented question that would have been more at home in a James Joyce novel than in a courtroom. And after asking it, looks at the witness and says, "It's a yes or no question." And then realizing it really wasn't, said, "You know, I'll just ask the next question." Here's the fun part. The question in question was about whether it's easy to carry a copy machine door to door when registering voters. I wish I was joking. So a little bit later, they were trying to impeach the witness, and the lawyer Becker stood up and said, "Well, I'm just going to read from her deposition." And the judge, again, a George Bush appointee, had to say, "Well, no, you can't do that. If you want to impeach the witness, show him the deposition. That's the procedure. You can be more pointed in cross-examination. Didn't you testify to such and such?" At which lawyer Rowe exhaled a deep and put-upon sigh, because they couldn't find the document they wanted to ask about, which would have been hearsay. If it wasn't such a revolting display of a desperate attempt to keep people from being able to exercise the franchise, it would be probably every bit as funny as the first few days' courtroom scenes from My Cousin Vinny. You know, My Cousin Chrissy. without all fun, all the fun things about, you know, these two Utes and, oh yeah, you blend. Jesus God. Exactly. Marty says, holy fool for a client, Batman. Yes, and it and idiot and idiot for a lawyer. There's just no let up. Oh, and by the way, you know, I'm sure you probably heard the story all about how Carl Icahn dumped a whole bunch of stocks when he heard about the upcoming tariffs. Actually, he dumped the stocks before anybody heard about the upcoming tariffs, but. Well, there's another similar case. Now, don't be getting all cranky just because I talk about something from sport. But the NFL recently ended its relationship with Papa John's Pizza. Papa John's will continue to sponsor 22 NFL teams, but Pizza Hut has apparently paid more money and has replaced Papa John's as the official pizza of the NFL, a concept which is, of course, ludicrous on its face. Not that it would be Pizza Hut instead of Papa John's, but that there would be an official pizza of the NFL. Official pizza of the... Does that really? You know, I'd like a pie tonight. I don't know whether to go to Papa John's or Pizza Hut or Domino's. Well, honey, which one's the official pizza of the NFL? Oh, well, we're going to Pizza Hut. I don't think that happens. But here's where it gets fun. Before the news became public that the NFL was ending its relationship, its official pizza relationship with Papa John's, Peyton Manning, again, before this became public knowledge, Peyton Manning suddenly up and sold the 31 Denver, Colorado area Papa John's franchises that he owns and which he purchased after he signed with the Broncos in 2012. Now, if Martha Stewart was doing this, she would already be in shackles and be in federal court on insider trading charges. Now, some of this may have to do with the craptastic behavior of right-wing asshat and former CEO of Papa John's and founder, John Schnatter. You know, you got that kind of money and you won't go and have your name changed away from Schnatter. Go figure. But back in October, he said that not kneeling, or that kneeling for the national anthem was... why Papa John's wasn't selling as many pizzas, sort of ignoring the fact that Papa John's pizzas, well, sucks. No amount of little pepperoncini peppers and partially hydrogenated fake garlic butter goo in a little plastic cup can make up for the fact that the pizza itself is, in a word, god-awful. Of course, since mid-February, I've become a complete pizza snob, and I think if it doesn't come from the city of New York, it probably is shitty pizza. I will now get emails from aggrieved citizens of the greater Chicagoland area. But Yes, precisely. Precisely, Brother Deacon Asa. I'll take insider trading for 300, Alex. Bleep, 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 bleep. Oh, we've got the... We've got the electronic trading daily double.
Yes.
Yeah, there we go. My cousin Vinny, says Bill in Allentown, what's a ute? I stopped buying Papa John's when Romney was running for president, and the owner backed him. Oh, now I want... You know, there's some kind of gets-close pizza around here, but not really. I mean, we've got pies and pints, which is okay. But you have to take out a boat loan for one because a large pizza is like $22. Marty wants to know, are you implying that Peyton might have engaged in a bit of insider trading? Perish the thought. Perish the thought. Randy reminding me, because you never know what's going to catch the attention of the Horn Family Community Congregation. Many years back, Pizza Hut was caught using silicone spray on their pre-shredded cheese so that it wouldn't clump. I thought I was the only one who remembered that. I almost mentioned it, Randy. I swear, I almost mentioned that. Silicone-coated mozzarella shreds. I'll be a son of a guy. But, yeah, it happened. And I haven't really been able to eat Pizza Hut pizza since. Plus, for some reason or another, if I eat their pan pizza, it's the only thing in the world that can overcome my proton pump inhibitor and give me heartburn. See, here it comes again. Marty. It's always Marty. Marty's the troublemaker. You know that, right? Papa Murphy's Chicago-style pizza. I have mercifully never heard of this. I just want the pizza that you can get at 3 o'clock in the morning when a near-terminal case of munchies has struck you somewhere on the island of Manhattan. Because I'm funny that way. So I guess that'll bring us pretty much up to speed or to the end of the program. As I promised, a busy little thorn in the side Thursday. We'll probably have to take the tweezers to all the thorns after the program this evening. Thanks to everybody who participated. Ah, yes, as Robert in Australia says, Pizza Hut, where the cardboard box has more taste. Well, it's kind of hard to tell between the cardboard box and which is the box and which is the pizza. Thank you all for your participation. Thank you for your generous sharing of your time in this ongoing conversation. Thanks to Philip for being the only one jumping in during the program this evening. Thank you so very kindly. Tomorrow, to finish the week, we will have a $385 fundraising goal. Thank you to each and every one of our subscribers who make it possible for us to have at least a quarter of the program funded each month. Thank you so very much. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa for HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Remember, when you order from Amazon, if you go to smile.amazon.com, S-M-I-L-E, smile.amazon.com, and you nominate Coal River Mountain Watch as your beneficiary, a small portion of every purchase you make at Amazon will go to support the front lines, point of the spear work for human rights and human dignity in the sacrifice zone of the mountaintop removal areas of West Virginia. And that's important. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all. Friday on the Front Porch comes around in just 21 hours.